Jesus said, "When I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all people to myself." Several years ago, an evangelical pastor that I know blew a gasket over a book that a very famous evangelical author wrote. "Heresy!" this guy shouted right in the middle of one of our clergy gatherings. "Pure heresy!" The book is called Love Wins. Perhaps you've heard of it. And in this book, the author entertained a very simple question. The question was this: what if, in the end, everyone gets into heaven? What if everyone discovers God's grace eventually? What if hell doesn't last forever? What if, in the end, God's love wins? But this irritated pastor was utterly convinced that if we Christians started to truly believe in universal salvation and this concept of everybody getting in the end, this would be the end of the church as we know it. He was dead set on that. Well, I guess nobody ever told this guy that universal salvation was pretty much the normative position of the church for like the first 500 years of its existence, at least. And that this view of salvation was openly promoted by the most respected theologians of that time, people like Origen and Gregory of Nyssa. And also, coincidentally enough, that also happened to be one of the most explosive seasons of growth for the church in all of history. "But if we hold to this view," this agitated pastor proclaimed to all of us clergy, "we will be setting the bar too low for people. They won't be motivated to come to church anymore, to even be Christians anymore, if they believe that in the end they will be saved, regardless of what they do or don't do." In other words, why spend a lifetime showing up to church, subjecting yourself to boring preachers like me, when instead you could just stay home and watch reruns of The Office and eat Lucky Charms out of the box on your couch on Sunday mornings, right? St. Peter's going to let you through those pearly gates anyways, right? Would you like to know how your loving, kind, and incredibly compassionate priest responded to angry evangelical pastor guy? I said to him, "Jim, when it comes to the afterlife and God's kingdom come, I was rather hoping that you wouldn't make the cut and that I wouldn't have to put up with you for a whole eternity. But if this author is right, then it means that you and I, yes, we are in this thing for the long haul. And I'm going to need God's grace, God's love, God's sacraments, and God's church now more than ever, because it's going to take the rest of my life to prepare for an eternity with you." And the whole room exploded with laughter at my response. Everyone thought I was joking. And in a way I was, but in a very real way, I wasn't. Christ has made space in his heart for all people, all of us. But for sinful and broken people like me, making that kind of space in my heart for even a handful of people that I don't like, like, that's no light matter. It actually takes a lifetime, and then some probably, of carrying one's cross. Jesus said, "When I am lifted up from the earth on the cross, I will draw all people to myself." All people. But surely all people here doesn't really mean all people. Jesus must have defined all differently than we do today. Or perhaps this was just a slip of the tongue or an error in translation. This can't mean what we think it means, right? This can't mean that Jesus is in the process of drawing all people throughout time and history to himself through his cross. This can't mean that in the end, all people will discover God's love for them, right? My friends, what if it turned out that the good news about Jesus Christ is so good that the word all really does mean all here? In our gospel reading for today, Jesus and his posse, they've gone to Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover. And at this festival, some non-Jewish Greek people show up on the scene, and they tell the disciples that they want to see Jesus. And I just love what happens next. Did you catch this in the reading? Philip goes to tell Andrew about these visitors, and then Andrew takes Philip to go and tell Jesus about these visitors. It's as if John, as he was writing his gospel down, was thinking to himself, gee, poor Andrew. Like, he's the least known of all of the disciples. I mean, what is Andrew actually known for? Peter is known for blurting out stupid things, like, all the time. Philip is known as the disciple who converted that one Ethiopian guy that one time. Thomas is known as the doubter. James and John were in Jesus' inner circle. But what about Andrew? What's his thing? Then it's like a light bulb went off in John's mind, and he said, aha, aha, from this day forth, Andrew will forever be known as the middleman between Philip and Jesus. He will forever be known as that guy who said, hey, Jesus, Philip's got something to say to you. Anyhow, I digress. Remember, my friends, Jesus' ministry all the way up until this very point had primarily been limited to the Hebrew people in the region of Galilee, with a few exceptions. The Syrophoenician woman, a Roman centurion and his lover, likely a male lover, a Samaritan woman at a well. But now the impact of Jesus' presence is being felt beyond the limits of Galilee. Now some Greek people are starting to feel mysteriously drawn to him. And Jesus sees this as the sign that very soon he's going to have to take up his cross. But did you notice how Jesus doesn't define the cross in this passage? He doesn't say, the hour has now come for the Son of Man to go and die in the place of all of you wretched, miserable sinners, so that I can appease my Father's wrath and anger. He doesn't say, the hour has now come for the Son of Man to die on a cross, so that if you just believe in me, you won't burn in hell for all of eternity. He doesn't say those things. What does he say? He says that through the cross, he will be glorified. In other words, there's something about the way in which he's going to die that will prove to all people that he truly is God with us. And he likens his death to a seed being planted in the ground that goes on to bear much fruit. And then he says that through his cross, he will draw all people to himself. All. And in case you're wondering how our gospel defines the word all here, I can actually tell you, for I am a nerd. This gospel is written in ancient Greek, And the ancient Greek word for all, it's the same word that we get our English word panoramic from. So it's a big picture, all-encompassing, holistic kind of thing that Jesus is addressing here. Jesus is literally saying that on the cross, he will draw the whole of humanity to himself. His words can also be translated in this way: I will draw every single human being to myself on the cross. And the Greek word for draw here is also really fascinating. With this particular word, the focus isn't on the people going to Christ and his cross as much as it is on the magnetic power of Christ's cross. The focal point is the cross being the attractor. It's like the cross stands at the center of history like a magnet, and it is a force so powerful, so compelling, that it will eventually pull all people into Jesus' saving embrace in the end. Like a black hole, or a giant planet, or a star, eventually Jesus will pull all things into the orbit of his cross. And ancient church fathers, people like Origen, Gregory of Nyssa, Ambrose of Milan, to name just a few, and mystics like Julian of Norwich, they taught that only God and the things of God are everlasting. So love is everlasting. Grace is everlasting. Peace is everlasting, because these are characteristics of God, of who God is. But things like evil and rejection and division and hatred, these things aren't everlasting in their nature, because they don't belong to God's everlasting nature. So these things will eventually cease, for they have no life, no existence in themselves. And these ancient Christians did believe in a thing called hell, but for them, hell wasn't a literal physical place filled with literal flames and demons with pitchforks. Rather, hell was a condition of the heart, of the soul. Hell for them was the self-inflicted punishment of choosing hard-heartedness over love over the course of a lifetime. Hell is choosing one's own egocentricity over loving communion with God, other people, and Mother Earth. As Saint Basil the Great taught, he said that Christ, through his cross, is teaching each and every single one of us how to become a koinonikos anthropos, a communal human being. Thus, hell is the agony of being trapped in one's own egocentricity. As Dostoevsky once said, hell is the inability to love. But even so, this hell of egocentricity, this hell of a loveless life, it will not last forever. Because again, only things like love and grace and peaceful communion will last forever. And yes, people do have free will. Yes, they can reject God. They can reject love. However, the thing that they choose in the place of God and of love, these things won't last forever. People's ability to reject God's love for them will eventually bottom out. It's like when a yo-yo hits the bottom of the string, the only direction it can go is back up again, right? The same is true of a soul hardened by hate. Ice thaws with enough exposure to the sun's rays. Likewise, even the hardest of hearts will thaw with enough exposure to the reality of the cross. Or as Origen once said, even the coldest steel will take on the property of fire when it is submerged in the flame for long enough. The same is no less true of the human heart. My friends, This is no low bar that our tradition holds out before us. For it is easy to write people off and to dismiss them, believing that God will judge and condemn and do away with them just as much as we do, right? But choosing to love, choosing to forgive, that is the really hard thing to do. To do it and to keep doing it. My friends, in the end, what Jesus is teaching us this morning is that God's grace will fully extend to everyone eventually, even to our greatest enemies. In the end, we will be fully reconciled to those who have most deeply wounded us. This is no small thing. But God, in His abundant grace, has given us a lifetime to learn how to forgive. God has given us a lifetime to figure out how to extend the same amount of grace and love to our enemies that God has extended to us. And Jesus invites us to imitate Him by taking up our cross. And as the greatest saints throughout history have always taught, your brother is the cross that Jesus invites you to take up. Your sister is the cross that Jesus invites you to take up. Your neighbor is the cross that Jesus invites you to take up. Your enemy is the cross that Jesus invites you to take up. That person in life who has most wounded you, that person is the cross that Jesus invites you to take up. The most deplorable person you know, that person is the cross that Jesus invites you to take up.